So.
Well, good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is the 195.1 FM and, of course, 1080 AM radio. For almost 50 years in September, we'll be celebrating. Oh, it's a beautiful morning. Plenty of sunshine, a light breeze. Today is the 25th day of June, and the year is 2018. And before I get to my guest, well, I'll say hello to him right now. I got to talk a little bit about the weekend. Boris Parker is in studio. And, Boris, thank you for coming down from the city's area. What town do you live in or city?
I'm in Minnetonka, Wayne. Good morning.
Okay. And we've been talking about the fact that your dad was going to be with, who fought with the Russians against the Germans during the Second World War, which was a horrible situation. And he doesn't speak a whole lot of English, and you were going to interpret as I talked to him, but this morning you called and said he won't be able to make it, but maybe some other time?
We'll set him up for another show, but he actually was a little younger than to fight. He didn't fight in World War II, but he lived through it. And the blockade of Leningrad and being evacuated down in the Kazakhstan region. So I think there's some interesting stories, some horrible stories, but that may be of interest to your listeners. And
it would be really neat
for me and my family to get him on the radio and get him recorded and get some of that documented. So he turned 90 here in April, and he's doing well. We just had a really crazy weekend, so I couldn't coordinate with him and get him down here this morning.
Now, does he speak any English at all?
He speaks English fairly well, but I think in order to get into some details and tell the story the right way, we'll give him some support.
But yeah, I would imagine he could understand my questions, and then maybe he couldn't in English express himself, whereas you would come in and he would say it in Russian and you would interpret it.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Well, we're going to just have to be stuck with you for 2 hours, Boris.
We'll give it a shot.
All right. Boris Parker, my guest on KYMN Radio. Boris, before we get talking, I got to tell about our weekend. And, of course, you know my wife, Julie.
Yes.
And she's the chairwoman of the ambassador program for the defeated Jesse James Day celebration. You've been down here for that.
Yes, I have.
And anyhow, she escorted the young ladies to South St. Paul and asked if I would come along and do announcing, and they're on the float and I'd be in the car, and it turns out that I was supposed to bring an adaptable microphone with me, and we didn't have one, so basically I just sat in the car, and this was one of the longest parades, and thousands of people, and of course promoting defeated Jesse James Days with the float and letting people know it's the weekend after Labor Day. That was Friday night. Then Saturday, what did she do? Saturday she went to, I can't recall where she went, but I went to Henderson, Minnesota for their sauerkraut days as a member of the Rice County Sheriff's Deputy Motorcycle Patrol. And I got there, and it was kind of empty, and I thought, well, it's a small town. And so I asked this guy, I said, where's the parade lineup? And he said, which one, the kiddie parade or the big parade? And I said, well, the big parade. He said, that's tomorrow. So I had a nice ride over there. And then yesterday, Julie took the young ladies to Lake City for their Lake Pepin celebration, and got to know more people and invite them to defeated Jesse James Day celebration. But I took off early because the Sheriff's Patrol was going to meet at the 11 o'clock. The parade started at noon, so I thought I better take off a little early. I know the route now, just straight out West 19. So I get to 169, and they have a barricade on the west side of that saying, no through traffic. Use alternate route, however you say it. Well, I'm going, where are the signs? The river flooded, and they had to shut down the crossing at Henderson. And I'm going, where are the signs? Use alternate route? What do I know? It's raining, by the way, raining. So I went down into Le Sueur, and I'm all wet, and I asked this guy at one of those gas stations so I could get out of the rain underneath the thing there. And he said, oh, what you do is you go here, then you get on 93, and then you take a right, and you should get right there. And I said, oh, thank you. So I looped through Le Sueur, headed out 93, which was posted, and as I got to a sign saying Henderson, I took the exit, and I realized I was right back where I started. The guy gave me the normal way to get to Henderson. So I thought, I'm going to give up. Nah, I'm going to try one more time. So I went back into Le Sueur, talked to a couple people. Oh, first of all, I went by the barricades. And I went through all this, about 2 miles of dirt road. It's called Henderson something or other, in the woods down by the river. And I came out right where I basically started. So I went south, and I got on 93, and I went north, and I finally ended up in Henderson. And there I sat in the rain on my motorcycle waiting for the guys. Nobody showed up. I mean, there was a parade, but I was the only one. And the whole idea is that we ride in tandem on our trikes, and it looks pretty cool. So I was the only one there and representing the Rice County, and I had a lot of fun. And came back, and it got sunny, and it was fine. So that's the way my weekend, Boris. I always do that on Monday, let people know we're out promoting Northfield.
Good.
Are you okay?
I think so.
Okay. Boris Parker, should we talk about who you are based on how I know you first, or should that just come up in a conversation?
Let me just give you a little bit of an aside in reference to the rivers that are overflowing here in Minnesota. When I was a law clerk, I'm still in law school in Oklahoma, I remember attending a trial with one of the attorneys there, one of the partners, and the trial was about a lady that didn't heed the barricade warnings and actually tried to cross either a river, I can't remember, or a levee that was flooded and got swept away and died. And the issue there was, you know, law enforcement authorities had put up a barricade not to cross. And the issue was, you know, did they need to do more? Did they need to put more barricades? In other words, how many barricades is enough for common sense and for people not to go through? So I guess the moral of the story is heed the warnings and the barricades and be safe, because bad things can happen.
But who won the case?
It was basically kind of what we call a split the bucks kind of case. So it was a small, I think, award for the victim or the lady that passed away, but nothing significant against the city that was, yes, you know, being sued for, that law enforcement, basically the police, that didn't put enough barricades there or enough warnings. You know, that was kind of the issue.
Well, I went through the barricades, and it was easy with a motorcycle.
Right.
And I went down, and I saw this dirt road, and I thought I'd take that, so I did take that. There was water, but not over the road, just on the side, and I, you know, comfortably got up to where I wanted to go after a couple of miles of dirt road in the rain. And yes, I agree that you, because I've seen a flash flood out in the Kenyon area on 56 and County Road 9 that swept cars away. And I do heed and appreciate, but everywhere I looked, it was all, there was no water. But once I got on the road that did go into Henderson from the southwest, there was water right up to the road, but not on the road, and traffic was going through.
Yeah. The moral of the story is be careful.
Amen, I say unto you. It's 9:13 on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is Boris Parker, and Boris and I have known each other for 15, I bet it is 15 years.
Almost 20.
Yeah, holy cow. And Boris, along with his partners,
Nick Werner.
Huh? Were you a partner at the time in the law firm?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. So that was with Floyd Sieferman, who passed away several years ago.
Oh, he was a Southern gentleman.
In every sense of the word.
Yep. When I remembered, Boris represented me when I was sued by an employee on 11 different charges. I was found not guilty on all of them, and we countersued, and I won all three of those. So, and it made history in the law books, right?
Right. It's a case that they teach here in the Minnesota law schools.
I even got somebody that called from, I think, does Columbia have a law school?
Yes, they do.
That the father told me his son was out there, and they said, hey, Dad, guess what? We have to study a case about, and it's highly unusual for an employer to win a lawsuit against an employee. So, you know, big victory, lots of hours, lots of dollars. But
water under the bridge.
Yeah, okay.
since we're on that topic this morning.
Okay, but I just want people to know our relationship here because Boris was the lead attorney on that, and we were talking about Sieferman and the Southern gentleman, and I'll never forget the plaintiff, I guess that's what you call her, lawyer brought in a guy that used to work for me. And he's the guy that made the cartoon card, remember? I don't know.
Yes.
And so they're trying to get him to say something negative about me, and they pulled that card out, and it was very complimentary and very nice, and had the guy read it, and then this gentleman, the Southern gentleman,
Floyd Sieferman.
He was an elderly gentleman with gray hair and a Southern drawl and just nice, slow-moving, but really...
Very, very calm.
Very impactful, though, with he said. So when the kid got done reading this very complimentary card about me that he had given me with some cool cartoons on it, Lloyd said, will you read that, please? And so John read it. And then Lloyd looked at him and he said, did you mean that? He said yes. That was the end of that.
Right.
So it was a pretty interesting case. But I want to know more about you, Boris, and I only know you on a professional level. Although you did introduce me to Tsuchi.
Tsuchi,
is that what you call it?
S-U-S-H-I.
Okay. In this fancy hotel in downtown Minneapolis. I don't know which one it was.
Probably the Grand Hotel.
And so you encouraged me to order some. Well, I was hungry, and I'm a meat and potato guy. Give me the mashed potatoes and gravy and the roast beef, and I'm happy. So I filled up on sushi, which was pretty expensive, and you bought.
Well, sushi. A good steak is pretty expensive as well, so...
But I kind of eat it in like piecemeal, you know. Okay, I'll have some more, please. So, anyhow, I've always wanted to know more about you. We did chit-chat and all that. Do you still have your grand piano?
We do.
Okay. I remember you got that for your wife for...
She actually has a newer piano. It's a Steinway B. It's about a 7-foot classic piano, which she enjoys very much.
A lot of our listeners are musicians. This town is full of musicians. That's why I bring that up. And that first one didn't even fit in your home very well, did it?
No, this one's even a little bigger. So she had a Schimmel, which is a German brand, and it has a brighter, more, I don't know how to describe the sound. She would probably do a better job than I am.
Okay.
But, you know, Steinway has probably the widest range of notes and clarity. And that's considered one of the best pianos.
Are you a player also?
I am not, no.
How many kids do you have now?
I have two daughters.
Two daughters. How old are they?
One is 16.
Oh, boy.
She's going to be 17 soon, and she was just playing in a golf tournament here, a two-day tournament in Ramsey, and won that yesterday. So we had a little chaotic weekend. I was out watching her Saturday and Sunday. And she shot 76, so it was pretty impressive score for anybody who's played golf.
That's four over, right?
That's four over.
That's
right,
pretty
each day.
Good.
And it wasn't an easy course, and they had some tough pin placements, especially on the par threes. And then I have an older daughter who's up in Duluth, and her husband just finished a PhD program, or PhD, a master's program for civil engineering, and she was born in 1989, so she's going to be 29 here in August. So Anastasia is the oldest, and Dasha is the youngest.
Anastasia and Dasha.
Yeah.
Russian names.
Russian names, right.
I remember one time when you invited me to a banquet of some sort, and it was all Russians. And I think you might have been the chairman of that event or something. Do you remember?
Yeah, we used to put an event together every year. It used to be called the Russian Seasons, and it was based off on what they used to do in Paris in the late 1800s, early 1900s. They would bring a ballet to Paris, and it was called the Seasons. And I can't remember the individual that put or the name of the individual that would organize that. So that was kind of based. We had some folks here on the board of the nonprofit that liked that particular event and wanted to kind of recreate it in a modern sense. So I think we had that for several years, the dinner and entertainment at the Minneapolis Convention Center. I think that's what you are recalling.
Oh, it was a beautiful thing. It seems to me, if I recall, there were artwork on the stage and artwork on the tables, and, you know, not a big picture on the table, but I mean, flowers and all. It was really fancy.
Right. It was intended to be a festival of art and music, yeah, and dance.
And we enjoyed that until the MC got up there and said, "I bet you somebody wants to come with that." What?
In English.
Yeah. 9:22 on 1080 Radio, KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota, a friend you can count on. My guest this morning is a gentleman by the name of Boris Parker, and we're going to be back in a minute and chit-chat about various things, so I want you to just hang in there, folks. More to come on KIM.
Northfield Construction Company has provided quality general contracting services to the Northfield community for over 45 years. Our experienced and diverse team can handle projects from the smallest home remodel to a large-scale commercial project. Whatever your construction need, Northfield Construction will deliver. Call us today about your next project. 507-645-8975.
Are you looking for a rewarding career with a successful growing company? Post Consumer Brands, the makers of Malt Meal, Honey Bunches of Oats, and Pebbles, is hiring full-time in Northfield. We're looking for passionate individuals with previous manufacturing experience and a high school degree. We offer competitive wages for production employees starting at $20.63 an hour and maintenance employees starting at up to $31 an hour, depending on experience. 401k with a generous company match and bonus incentive plans. To view openings and apply for our full-time positions, visit jobs.postconsumerbrands.com/KYMN.
I got a thing here to remind you that coming up at 11 o'clock, well, it's 15 with the author, and the title pretty much says it all. Just when you're comfortable in your own skin, it starts to sag. Rewriting the Rules of Midlife. On today's 15 with the author, Terry Nate talks to Amy Noble, half of the best-selling duo with Tricia Asworth. They take women through the new and sometimes challenging midlife phrase in this cleverly witty guide. Amy talks about letting go of who we thought we were supposed to be and redefining beauty as we age. She talks about how social media affects moods. The book is filled with humor, quizzes, and inspiring quotes from women who've been there, done that. That's at 11 o'clock this morning on 15 with the author. At 9:23, our guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair is a fellow by the name of Boris Parker. And Boris, you know, I've had the experience of working with you, and of course your role as my attorney was to ask questions at $400 an hour?
$695.
Pardon me?
$695.
Was it $695? Okay. Anyhow, I'm going to turn the tables on you, and I'm not going to charge, okay?
Very good.
I want to know more about you. I interview over 1,500 different people since I started the show, And everybody's interesting, and I was really looking forward to your dad coming down, but that's for the future, and that's good. But I want to get to know about you, and your name is Boris Parker. Now, your folks are immigrants, correct?
As well as I.
That's right. You were born in Russia.
So I was born in Russia, and my folks were born in Russia. So we arrived here by airplane, 1979.
And when were you born?
1970.
Okay, so you were 9 years old, so you kind of had a handle on what was going on.
Well, more or less. I have memories of what was going on back in the 70s. And I finished the first two grades in Russia and then came here and went into fourth grade without any English, but because of the math skills and the level of the mathematical education in Russia, which is actually fairly good, or was at that time, and more advanced than it is here, and that's something that we need to improve, get better math.
Well, yeah, we need engineers, for example, you know.
Well, we just need to teach mathematics and get more kids interested in math. And, you know, it's okay to be, you know, a little geeky and be successful.
Well, you are a geek, so congratulations.
Thank you very much.
now.
A big geek.
you haven't gotten any heavier than the last time I saw you.
Thank you.
But here's the deal. They say music is a universal language.
Yes.
But you could also put that into math because 2 + 2 = 4 no matter where in the world you go.
Right.
So you excelled, I assume, when you got into the fourth grade in America.
that I did, but there's an interesting story on that. Dasha's my wife's father is basically a nuclear level physicist. So here's another interesting guest to have on your show.
Okay,
and he basically defected here in the early 90s. He was here on a conference and then decided, you know, threw his arms up in the airport and stayed. I think it was in 91. And he, you know, tutors my youngest in math, or you know, at least they work on math, and he gets frustrated quite a bit, especially when he looks at, you know, ACT tests, SAT tests, because in his mind, you know, they're not teaching or asking really mathematical questions or challenging the intellect of our, you know, teenagers that are proceeding on to college. You know, he thinks is just more of a some boilerplate questions that they're really not getting to test the intellect of the kids. So, and that, you know. So he sees, you know, the program, the way math is taught here, you know, as not sufficiently challenging or creating the type of thinkers, mathematical thinkers, that we need to be successful, basically. And that it's more robotic, and I don't know if I'm making sense or not.
But. Well, for a guy that flunked geometry the first time, and a guy who flunked higher algebra the first time, I liked math, but you have to stay on it to get to the final answer. And there's, you know, no cheating. At least when I went to school, you had to show how you got to your answer rather than just answer.
Which is good. That shows that you can think, and understand the process. So that's kind of the important part is showing, you know, and understanding how things work and being able to solve problems.
So Dasha is your wife's name.
My wife's name is Elizabeth.
Elizabeth. Oh, who's Dasha?
Like the queen. Dasha is actually Daria, formerly, which she doesn't like, but Daria means basically it's a gift in Russian. So Daria. You know, Robert, Bob, Daria, Dasha. So okay. She goes by Dasha. Dasha's my youngest. Dasha's my youngest. 16 years old.
Okay, she's the golfer.
Right.
Okay, she's 18. All right.
16,
okay.
Elizabeth is my wife.
Okay. Elizabeth, do you call her Liz?
We do.
You do?
And so do you.
Yeah, okay. Okay, and then what's your other daughter's name, the 29-year-old one?
Anastasia.
I love that name. Is there a nickname for that?
Anna? Nastya. Nastya. Nastya is basically N-A-S-T-Y-A.
Anastasia.
And in Russian, it's pronounced Anastasia.
Okay. All right, there. Are they learned in Russian? Do you speak Russian in the
home? They are to a certain extent. So, English is more important these days. So,
yeah,
they mainly communicate in English, but they can understand and they can read and write. So,
let's go back to Russia. And
sure.
What did your father do in Russia? Now, you said he just turned 90. Is that correct?
He turned 90 in April, correct.
But wouldn't he have been at the age of being a soldier when he was a young man?
He was born in 1928. And so World War II basically started in 1939, so he was 11, 12, and that's why he was evacuated with his brother, who was a few years older, to the south regions of the country, which is now known as, you know, basically Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, the stans.
Well, Kazakhstan, they made a movie about the premier, didn't they? Did you ever see that?
No, I didn't.
The guy that went around saying he was the premier of Kazakhstan and everybody believed him, and
he went
to Washington parties and all of that, and because nobody knew where it was. So your father by trade
was a dentist.
A dentist?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was he a dentist when he came to the United States?
No, because he had to learn English, and then you have to pass all of the exams. And he was, I think, how old was he? He was close to 50, I think, right, or no?
Wow.
No, 40, in 19, yeah, he was basically 50 years old when he came here.
And then started dental school?
Not here, no.
Oh.
He did not.
So he went to dental school in Russia?
He went to dental school in Russia and completed and worked. And
did he take up dentistry here in
No,
America?
He couldn't. He couldn't because you have to retake all of the exams
yeah.
and stuff. So it was easier. His older brother went to, instead of immigrating to the United States, immigrated to Israel. And he was a physician, and he taught at the university in St. Petersburg. And then, so he in Israel, he could continue to practice with certain, I think, certain qualifications, which were minor. He could continue to practice as a physician, which he did. But my folks wanted to come to the States, and it's a whole different ballgame. You basically have to start all over, Wayne. So.
Well, I understand that, and that's why I enjoy learning about it. Do you have siblings?
I do not.
So you're the only child.
I am.
Fourth grader, 9 years old,
yep.
When you come to the United States. What part of Russia did you live in?
St. Petersburg, or what is now known as St. Petersburg, and what used to be known as St. Petersburg until the 1917 revolution that turned St. Petersburg into Leningrad.
And now it's back to St.
Petersburg? Now it's back to St. Petersburg, correct.
Is that the war that they, that great movie was made? Laura, I think, is a theme from the song. Do you know what I mean?
Dr. Zhivago.
Yes. I remember seeing that in Denver, and it was the first time they had stereo in theaters. And I remember a scene where you could hear tinkling of bells, and then the horse carriage came onto the screen and crossed the screen, and the tinkle of the bells went right with it. And I just remember that. And I remember the woman in that show was gorgeous. I don't remember her name. So, when your dad and mom decided to come to the United States, did they have to apply or did they sneak out?
They applied, so there was an opportunity. You had several waves of immigration from Russia. One was after World War II. And then the other one was basically in the late 70s, when, if you recall, the 1980 Olympics were in Russia. And that opened up the door as a gesture of goodwill. In the late 70s, Russia was allowing immigration out from Russia to Europe, to Israel, to the United States, in limited numbers. So my folks applied.
And Jimmy Carter wouldn't let the U.S. team go to Russia.
Well, and you know why, right? Do you recall?
Well, you tell me why.
I'm testing your memory.
I think it was a Cold War going on.
It was the invasion of Afghanistan.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Russia invaded Afghanistan, I think in 1979.
Wow.
Which created, you know, quite a conflict, and then the U.S. pulled out of the Olympics.
And if I remember correctly,
Russia didn't do very well in Afghanistan either. So, in comparing our trip to Afghanistan,
I remember watching a report on 60 Minutes or whatever it was, and they were interviewing Afghanistanis, if that's how you say it, and how they were mountain men, and of course the way they dressed was, you know, foreign to us, and here's this country taking on the second largest military strength country and getting their butt kicked, and they were using American weapons.
Well, it was similar. It's a similar setting to what we had in Vietnam. So it's just you have mountains, and we have our own experience, you know, as a nation in Afghanistan and Iraq, and it's all, you know, it's a different type of setting. And when you're, you know, in an environment where you have to, you know, battle forces that are, you know, fighting for their life, and they're entrenched in their homes, or, you know, where it's, you know, in this case it's a mountainous region, it makes things quite difficult. And that's why you want to make sure when you're there with a purpose.
Now, Boris is Russian and Parker is not. So what was your Russian last name?
Pekir.
Pekir?
Pekir. It's like Baker.
Okay.
So when we modified it when we came here, so it was easier to pronounce.
You do
so
that?
And it actually fits quite well because I'm half Russian, half American, or more American now probably than Russian. So I have a proper American last name.
Did they choose that name before they came, or did
we chose it after we came?
Okay, so when the papers were all made up, it had
the original names,
right. And then you petition the court to change your name.
Correct.
And you
could change them too at the border. You know, you hear a lot of stories where people coming in the border that all the names are modified. So,
what was it like being a young baby growing all the way up to 9 years old in Russia? Did you have a knowledge of America? Did you have radio, television, papers?
Well, my parents did, but you know, you're in your environment, your world as a kid, and it's funny, and it seems, you know, kind of big. I remember the playground, for instance, that I was playing on as a child, and then I came back in the 90s, back to where we used to live in the city, and I'm looking at this playground, and it's like a slide, you know, and a couple of, you know, monkey bars and stuff. So it's a different, the interesting part is just the perspective as a kid that everything seems, you know, bigger or larger than life and interesting and all that stuff. And then you come back and you look at it, it's a totally different experience.
I remember when we lived in Little Canada, I remember a huge hill. I mean, holy cow. You'd roll down that and it was amazing. And I went out there as an adult and I went, that's it?
Right.
So I understand that, what you're saying. What was your living situation in, you know, we get different views of Russia over the years and all that. Did you live in a home or in a, well, home is where you live, but did you live in a house or an apartment complex?
Well, we had both. We had, so the majority of the population lived in more like condominiums or apartments, and they were owned by, you know, by the family. Basically, it's more or less a condominium. It's more, I would, you know, from a Minnesota perspective, you could equate it, you know, more to living in the city like New York, you know, where you have a lot of dwellings within the city rather than kind of life in suburbia, which we have more here in Minnesota. But we also had a house about half an hour outside of the city, which was, so we've had kind of both, which was, you know, they're considered, in Russia, they're called dachas, or they're cabins, you know. But they're, you know, at that time it was 30 minutes, 40 minutes outside the city. These days we have, you know, people commute 30, 40 minutes. It's no big deal. So, but so we had actually a fairly good sized home, a regular, you know, what you would consider a regular family type residence there outside the city, and we had a couple apartments or condos in the city, so we had a car, and so we were doing just fine.
Why was your dad well off?
Well, I don't know if we're well off or just, you know, they were able to work and do what they were. My dad, my mom, and had some family assistance, and on my mom's side, my grandfather actually had a tailoring type of business, which was not necessarily legal, and that's actually an interesting story, and I don't know as much about it. I have a cousin who is a professor at the University of Texas, and he teaches engineering there. He's an MIT grad, and he's going to be here in September for 3 months to work with some colleagues here at the University of Minnesota. So he would actually be an interesting person to bring on, because he remembers, he's a little older than me, he remembers a lot of the family dynamics and the history, and he's very eloquent, and he could speak to a lot of aspects of what went on in Russia and the various family dynamics that took place at that time.
The condos that you had in town, were they rented or did the
No, they're basically you own them. They're passed. They're like, you know, it's in, they pass by inheritance. So
okay. So how big was your yard on the home that you had?
You know, it was pretty good size, but I remember that we didn't necessarily, you know, didn't have all of the. It was more of a cabin type of structure. It had the coal burning furnace downstairs, mm-hmm. where you get the, you know, the coal would be delivered by truck, and then you go in a basement and you load the you know, the furnace with the coal. I remember doing that.
I did that.
I came back in the 90s. I remember doing that and, you know, heating the home. So so you know, it wasn't up to modern specs, but then I think we sold it and somebody put in all of the modern conveniences. But it was a good home. We had hot water, plumbing. It was a very very nice home, and I remember enjoying it as a kid.
I'm going to take a break and we'll be back. Our guest this morning on KYMN Radio is Boris Parker.
Millstream Commons Assisted Living is where the all-star seniors enjoy life in Northfield. From the delicious meals, the bright, spacious apartments, the volunteer projects, the bus trips we take, classes we attend, and the music we enjoy, there's something for everyone. At Millstream Commons, we treat everyone like an MVP. For more information, call 507-650-0141.
This is David Ludischer of Grundhoffer & Ludischer, Attorneys at Law. Marv and I, and the best legal staff anywhere, are pleased to introduce you to the newest members of our legal team, Jennifer Novak. Jennifer grew up in Lonsdale. She was previously a law clerk to several judges and has years of experience in social work. Jennifer joins Marv, me, and Robin Finke. Robin joined us last year. Robin has over two decades of experience, much of it as a trial attorney. And for the curious, yes, Marv still comes in every day.
We're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN, 95.1, the 1 FM. And Boris was just mentioning that we talked about this before. Well, you were on the air with me several years ago. We did part one.
It's probably at least 5 years now.
Yeah, and so I'm sure our listeners, including myself, don't recall everything that you said. So if it seems repetitive, it is because it is. So
I don't mind it.
I want to know about, you know, what was your feeling and how did you learn that you were going to cross the sea to America?
You know, I don't have a specific recollection. You know, you have certain pictures in your mind or in your head as we're, you know, leaving. I do remember being, you know, being inspected at the airport. I had a like a stuffed animal as we were leaving Russia. So I had one of the relatives gave me a stuffed animal, like a, you know, stuffed dog. And then they, as we were going through security, so one of the main issues at that time, they were letting people go. We opened up that limited window in the late 70s to let people leave the country, and then everything closed again until Gorbachev and really the late 80s and early 90s. So you didn't see the next wave until, like, my wife's father came here early 90s. She came here early 90s. So that was kind of the next wave of immigrants. But so they would inspect. When we were leaving, you couldn't take anything with you. So all of your jewelry, all of your, you know, money had to, you could only take $300 with you. So you're starting from scratch. Oh, you could bring some personal belongings, furniture. I know we filled a container worth of, you know, with furniture and pots and pans and shipped it over here. But anything of value you had to leave behind. And so they were checking that to make sure. Some people would, you know, try to smuggle diamonds or smuggle a wedding ring. Yeah. You know, they'd sew it into their pants, you know, underwear or something. So they would. I remember what they took away, the stuffed animal that I had, and they split it open, you know, to check
right
any contraband. You know, that they there's nothing in the animal, but that, you know, that I remember that I didn't get the animal back. So
you
that,
didn't?
No.
Oh. Did you cry?
I can't remember, but I'm sure it wasn't too happy about it. And I remember standing, and they took us into a room, and then you got to basically strip down, and they, you know, patted you down, make sure you weren't smuggling anything onto the airplane, you know, of your own.
Now, did you have somebody greet you at the airport?
So the immigrant trail in 79 or the late 70s took people from Russia into Europe, and one of the main landing spots was Italy, in the south of Italy, basically south of Rome or Osio, basically, was where we ended up staying. And before that, actually, we went through Austria. So we went St. Petersburg, we spent 2 weeks in Austria, in Vienna. That was our initial landing spot. Then we landed in Italy. And you stayed in Italy for a couple months. It's kind of, you needed to rent.
Months?
Well, you were waiting for, there was an organization here in the U.S. that helped set up initial housing. Because you're coming to a new country with no language and basically no money, because the government's not letting you take anything out. Later in the 90s, when after Gorbachev and the wall came down, then you could, you know, you could wire transfer funds, you could sell your property, which we couldn't do at the time that we left. We had several properties that we couldn't sell.
Did you?
So we had to transfer them into, you know, the names of our relatives.
Sure.
And stuff. So you basically, at that time, you know, that's a pretty, you talk about life-changing decisions. I mean, it's you know, drop everything and careers and, you know,
and
family.
What do you think made him, your dad, do that?
I think my mom.
Your mom?
Basically was the driving force and behind it.
Did she have some profession she could get into in the United States?
She was a book editor for a number of years. Scientific journals in Russia, so that's her educational background. And then she went into cosmetology, and that's what she continued to do here. When she came, she was the one that got her license in cosmetology and worked for many years in that field. But I think she was the impetus behind the move. I think obviously my dad was in of a similar mindset as her, and they just wanted they wanted to be free. And, you know, everybody has their own understanding of freedom, but it's just the ability, you know, I think maybe to sleep peacefully at night, not be able to do what you want to do, you know, and that's what this country allows us to do. If we want to, you want to work and be successful, you can do that. If you want to farm, as you know, and work with the earth, you can do that and be successful as well. You know, or you can be on the radio. You can own your own business. There's just more opportunities here to find yourself, to be yourself, to express yourself, That's, I think, what, you know, it's that dream, and especially in those days where you knew very little about the country itself or where you're going, other than what you're hearing on the radio. There wasn't any internet. You know, you don't have the kind of exposure now that we do.
Did you know about Hollywood?
Well, sure. They knew about Hollywood, and you would see some Hollywood movies in Russia they would play. In fact, I remember seeing a movie, and I looked it up recently because I was trying to, I was talking to my dad, and I remember seeing, maybe I'll look it up during a break. It was about a trucker, you know, American trucker. And I remember watching that movie in Russia during the summer. So, you know, and I have this memory that I went to the movie theater by myself and watched this, you know.
Was Gorbachev a hero to you?
I don't know if I've ever looked at him as a hero. I think Gorbachev, you know, he opened the door, and he opened a crack, and then the floodgates, you know, swung open, or he opened the lock.
Yeah.
But you know, I think they had little choice but to make changes, and you can see even how the country is now, where it's completely different from what it was when we were there. Even though it's turning a little more authoritarian, it's still open from a more or less from the financial market standpoint, from, you know, travel, from a player on the world stage. Russia is completely different. It's much more open, and it probably, if it was in that state back in the 70s, we probably would not have left.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's more you know, opportunities to live a life that's closer to what we live here. But again, there's more suppression, and Putin's been in power for I think what is it, term number 4. So you still have a lot of those aspects of control, where there isn't that system of checks and balances that we have here. And the critical piece is that system of checks and balances. As long as that checks and balances system is effective, where we have the legislative and executive and the judicial branch holding more or less equal power, then we're going to be okay. Once, if the executive pulls the power into itself, then we're going to have a problem. That's the main difference between, you know, Russia and the United States. It's the main difference between the United States and many countries in the world, is that there are more beautifully written constitutions, more modern than the one here in the U.S., but they're not enforced in the same manner that the Constitution is enforced here. And it's not always pretty. We have debates. We have people on different sides of many issues. But that the Constitution and the judicial branch, and why I went into law, was that I saw that the law meant something here, that the voice of the judiciary managed, you know, and balanced the legislative and executive branch, and that you knew, and it's very interesting, it means a lot.
Did you go see Gorbachev when he was like visiting the governor's office on Summit Avenue?
I mean, yeah, I remember was he like, was here.
Yeah.
I can't remember if I was at the state. I was in Oklahoma in law school in the mid 90s. I can't remember when exactly he was here.
Well, in the mid-90s...
I did not go see him. So.
In the mid-90s, I was president of the Broadcasters Association, and we had speakers at our conventions, and one of the fellows that... excuse me. One of the fellows went to Russia to help build independent radio stations, and he thought he was doing a good deed, and he was going to, you know, have financial gain, but it was done in an altruistic way. And when he got there, he couldn't believe all the crap that was going on in regards to getting a radio station built and getting a license. You have to pay everybody all the way up, from the construction workers to the license. I mean, from his speech, I took away that you just couldn't afford to do anything over there, because they were inviting people to come to Russia and help this new world they were having. But there was so much
corruption.
Thank you.
Right.
Were you caught up in that or familiar with it? Or?
I spent a few months there in the fall of 93, and I had some friends from Minneapolis that were in Moscow also setting up a radio station, Radio Liza. So I went there, but, you know, I did a little bit of work there for a couple of weeks for, like, British Petroleum over there. I was interested after college in 93. The world was kind of opening up over there, or the country was opening up, to go and see what I could do. But what I found was that I wasn't necessarily welcome there. The question is, don't you have, you know, jobs in America? Why are you here? We're suffering as it is. And it was a really tough time because it was a transitioning economy. They basically went bankrupt in the late 80s in Russia. And that's what spurned Gorbachev. That's required them to open the doors, more or less, to get the foreign investment and the infusion from foreign governments, the assistance to prop up the economy. They went from a government-owned system to a private-owned system rather quickly, and there's a lot of people, the oligarchs that you hear about, you know, they took advantage of privatization. They bought up, you know, so you had employees at the factories that they were given, you know, given stock, and that they had no idea what that was in a factory or a particular industry, and they would buy those, you know, shares up, and those individuals that understood the system, understood where the value was later down the road, really took advantage and did well. So
we have to take a final break this hour on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. First of all, let me tell you about the QB. That's the Quarterback Club right here in Northfield, Minnesota, locally owned, locally managed, and they serve breakfast till 10 o'clock, so you only have about 3 minutes to get in there and get a breakfast, but they are starting up on their roasted chicken, their baby back barbecued ribs with mountains of madness just oozing all over them in the form of a special sauce. You'll love them at the QB. Don't forget, they also are the only place in town that has they have those burgers that are flame broiled. The QB, Highway 3 and 3rd Street.
Take a short drive to Delicious to the Fireside Lounge and Supper Club in Denison. The Fireside is just a short 10-minute drive from Northfield. Wednesday is Rib and Wing Wednesday. Choose 6 or 12 of Fireside's jumbo wings and your choice of sauces. Plus, beginning at 4 p.m., you can enjoy the Fireside's fall-off-the-bone barbecue ribs, served with your choice of potato and sides at a special Wednesday price. The Fireside now opens at 11 a.m. Wednesday through Saturday and Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. for breakfast. Take this short drive to Delicious and enjoy ribs and wings today at the Fireside Lounge and Supper Club in Denison.
Leo South in Lakeville is not your typical power sports company. It's family-owned and run, meaning you actually get to talk to the owners. What's even more impressive is they have 25-plus employees, and they all work every hour they're open. So you don't have to stand in long lines waiting for help. Plus, get faster and more coordinated service. And getting parts, well, there's so much experience behind the parts counter, you'll be amazed. Our motto is, we sell fun. But every day, our mission is to help you from finding parts, getting service, or shopping for something new. And fun, too. Visit leosouth.com to tempt yourself.
Here we go with the number 10 song of all of 1988, the year my guest graduated from high school. Name that tune. It sounds familiar?
It sounds familiar. I don't remember the name, though.
It's called The Flame.
Another night slowly closes in.
Cheap Trick.
Remember Cheap Trick.
All right. It is 2 minutes before news on Kim, a friend you can count on. As I said before, I'll repeat once more, it's 1080 AM radio that I adore. What am I talking about here? Boris, the second hour, we'll chit-chat more about your career. And I wanted to know at this time now, when I say this, it might be tongue-in-cheek, but then again, do you have a mail order bride?
Do I have a mail order bride?
I'm glad you stumbled on that, too.
I do not.
Okay.
I do not.
Well,
but
she
was. I have a beautiful bride from Russia, but she didn't come here by mail.
Okay.
But she did, you know, her dad did defect. And we can talk a little bit about the immigration laws because she had two younger siblings that got to come here with her mom. But since she was over the age of 21, she got stuck in Russia by herself. And it took a little finagling for her to get here. And then she applied for asylum. So, and she did everything legally. And she stayed, and we got married, and the rest is history.
As they say. Now, we're coming up on the news in a minute here on KYMN, Northfield, Minnesota, 1080 AM and 95.1 FM. In the second hour, I want to talk to you about the tariffs that the U.S. government is imposing on imports from, for example, China. I know I've always wondered why these huge cargo ships would come over just stock full of stuff from China and they'd turn around and go back empty. And, you know, that's pretty expensive to cross the ocean with an empty liner. So maybe you can help us out because you work into that area. So stick around for part two or part four or 19 or whatever it is. All right, Boris?
Thank you, Wayne.
All right. It is 10 o'clock on our clock here in the KYMN studios.
Migrants, housing, immigration czar. I'm John Trout. The latest on the nation's immigration debate.
To keep families together and reunite those separated but still keep tabs on the adults who would be prosecuted for entering the U.S. illegally, the administration is looking at surplus housing at military installations. Democratic Senate Leader Chuck Schumer is calling on the president to appoint an immigration czar of sorts to handle reunification of families. Bob Costantini, Washington.
Democratic Congresswoman Maxine Waters is calling for people to confront Trump administration staff in public over immigration policy. That, as Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen and White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders have had unpleasant experiences at restaurants recently. At the Pentagon, Barbara Starr reports top U.S. military officials are headed to North Korea to detail a specific timeline for that country's denuclearization.
For a timeline and for tasks, what the U.S. wants to see North Korea do specifically to achieve denuclearization. The president already saying that that is happening, but there's no evidence it's happening.
The Trump administration is set to announce measures this week cracking down on Chinese investment in key technologies in the U.S. Tariffs imposed by the EU have led to Harley-Davidson kick-starting a new plan.
At Harley-Davidson, it's about legacy and it's about legitimacy of what we're...
Critics of the move say some of Harley-Davidson's legacy just changed with its decision to shift the production of motorcycles heading for Europe from the U.S. to factories overseas. In a regulatory filing today, one of the reasons the classic American bike maker cites for the decision are new costs it now faces due to new tariffs being placed on bikes being exported to the European Union. Harley-Davidson officials say the financial effect of the tariffs would be as much as $100 million per year. I'm Scott Carr.
Early trading on Wall Street finds the Dow down 276 points. I'm John Trout.
Everybody, welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on this beautiful Monday morning, June 25th. The year is 2018. My guest is Boris Parker. He immigrated to America with his parents when he was 9 years old and became a studious individual and ultimately got his law degree. And Boris, a couple of things I want to talk about. Now, this isn't going to be fun, but you're more knowledgeable than I. And that just on the news, they talked about Harley Davidson, an American icon business, is going to be shipping some of their parts over to Europe to be assembled there because of the tariff or something. It's getting to be, Harley Davidson building outside of Milwaukee. I mean, this
right.
is terrible.
The United States, pretty crazy.
Yeah. So, when the current administration was able to talk some countries into sticking, or companies, to stay in America and some to come back to America, now we're hit with this pretty big tariff. And are you involved at all in international business?
Well, I'm not involved in international business per se, which is kind of interesting. That's something that I wanted to do when I was in college and later in law school, but I found that basically the need for the business knowledge was actually here, and how to navigate the judicial process or the legal process in the United States. So what I ended up over time is representing a lot of companies that are either owned by immigrants or are do business, or basically are owned outside of the United States, and we represent their interests here. And so we have a diverse mix of various types of small to medium sized business clients, as you know. And one of those clients is a company called CF Moto, and CF Moto is a manufacturer, started in the 80s as a manufacturer of engines in Hanzhou, China, which is about 150 kilometers inland from Shanghai. And it's a beautiful city with lakes and mountains, and they grow Longjin tea there, which is one of the prized teas in China. And so CF Moto in the early 2000s was private labeling scooters for the U.S. market, and had a number of distributors here, and then they also do business all over the world, in South America and Europe and so forth. And then they set up shop here in 2007 and began to develop their own CF Moto brand. And so they manufacture scooters, motorcycles, ATVs, UTVs, side-by-sides, those types of on-road and off-road products.
When you say here, are you talking Minnesota or are you talking in America?
So here in Minnesota, they set up shop here in Plymouth, Minnesota. So they have a facility in Plymouth that employs roughly about 50 people as of today, and then they sell to dealers throughout the United States. Now, the vehicles, as their current model is based mainly on off-road vehicles, ATVs, side-by-sides, UTVs, and those vehicles are manufactured in China, and then they are shipped here, and or basically drop-shipped to the dealer, and then the dealer completes the final assembly, puts the roll cage on, and the wheels, and so forth. So that's one client and one entity that's going to be affected by this proposed 25% tariff. That's was the most recent basic tax on import goods, and there's a list of 50 billion worth of products. Basically, it's based on the harmonized tariff code.
Now, when you say 25%, what is that 25% of? Is it retail, wholesale, manufacturer's cost?
What it's typically based on is FOB rates, and that's free on board, or at the rate that the U.S. distributor pays, like Harley Davidson, for instance. So let me just take it one step back.
Sure.
So what the Trump administration is employing is what's called Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974. So we have a harmonized tariff code. Say any product, from the headphones that you're wearing to the shirts to the parts on the motorcycle that you're riding, everything comes into the United States under a particular tariff code. And there's an import duty associated with that code, and it's usually 2-3% of the value that the U.S. distributor or the U.S. company like you know, Harley Davidson is paying to the company that's outside the United States that's either manufacturing or tooling, whatever they're doing with that part. So what the Trump administration is, you know, focusing on is the disbalance between the deficit, or what you're saying, full containers coming in, empty containers coming out, and they're imposing, they're using Section 301, which is typically used by the U.S. Trade Representative to conduct hearings and make findings with respect to disbalances in trades or theft of intellectual property, or basically where you have unjustified, unreasonable, or discriminatory type of practices that the U.S. determines is being undertaken by a either a party or a nation outside of the United States, and that affects the United States. So then that gives them, under that section, you know, we're also part of the World Trade Organization that has its own mechanism where we're supposed to technically, the U.S. and China are supposed to go to the WTO to air out their trade disputes, but the United States instead is choosing its own private action under this Section 301. And they conducted a hearing. So this is a second round of tariffs. The first round of tariffs was on steel products. And the Trump administration is very interested in protecting or reviving the steel industry here in the United States.
Which affects China and Canada?
And Europe to some extent as well. So in Japan. Those tariffs are already in place. The second round of tariffs are supposed to go into place here July 6th. And so we had the hearing. I was in Washington, D.C. at the U.S. Trade Representative hearing, and it was a three-day hearing. Was attended by more than 100 U.S. companies that made presentations both pro and against the tariff. And I think statistically, they're also posted online. You could make comments online, and there were over 3,000 comments made online. And statistically, I believe 90% of the companies, and you're talking about, you know, anywhere from, you know, boat manufacturers to engine manufacturers to the Automobile Association to the Fashion Association to TV manufacturers, everybody in any type of supply chain related to products that come through or come from China are going to be affected. So all of those entities that are going to be affected by this tariff, which is basically, it's an additional 25% tax or import duty on the same products that are coming in right now, pursuant to this supply chain, this global supply chain, whether it's General Motors that's, you know, acquiring certain products or something's being built in China for them, or you know, Best Buy that's buying TVs, you know, TVs,
Japan,
or a company like CF Moto that's manufacturing over there and then bringing in the vehicles here for sale to the public through our dealers. So what happens is you basically now have an increased cost of 25%, which then you either have to make adjustments on the supply side, right, the entity that's selling the product, or you have to, you know, lower your profit margins. A company like Harley Davidson, which is struggling to, as it is, you know, is being hit by a 25% tariff that now affects its bottom line. It either has to find other sources of manufacturing, right, or it has to basically pass that cost on to its dealers, or ultimately to the consumers, right, to somehow account for it. And that's why we have this debate now, and then concerned by a number of businesses that this is a significant problem, because it's basically a additional 25% tax or tariff on the value of the product that's coming into the United States. And it's intended, and it has had the effect of bringing China, for instance, to the table, or, you know, Mexico or Canada, where they're trying to renegotiate NAFTA, to make concessions, where China has, for instance, agreed to open up its financial sector, where it used to be you only could go in as a joint venture. Now they're saying, we'll let you come in if a U.S. entity wants to come in for instance, to do insurance or do any some kind of banking, where
he doesn't have to set up a joint venture and share the knowledge and technology with China. But apparently there's not enough concessions, and they can't agree. And, you know, verbally you heard on the news our Secretary of the Treasury, I believe, announced that China was committing to purchase $300 billion more of goods, but nothing's been put down to writing. And then they've moved forward with these tariffs. So, the hope is that the negotiations continue and that we do have some kind of revised trade agreement in place, and we don't have to navigate through these tariffs or the uncertainty, because, any business client, and, especially manufacturers, or you have a company like Harley-Davidson, it has suppliers in a supply chain and, that it's been building for over many years, and you can't just go and source a part somewhere else on a short-term basis, because you don't know the quality of the production. There are a lot of factors that come into play, and that's why these disrupt. It's a disruption to the world supply chain, and it could, potentially create problems. So,
what? Boris Parker, my guest here on KYMN Radio. In the absolute end, who makes out the best? The lawyers.
Well, not necessarily in this case, because there's not much that not much the lawyers can do. It's who's going to make out the best. It's the companies. For instance, it's a company in Malaysia that's not subject to the 25% tariff. That's going to, or the company in Europe that's going to pick up the order from Harley Davidson. It's those companies that are not affected, that can ramp up their production and to meet the supply needs as they're going to shift. And one of the other reasons, for this tariff is the Trump administration is looking, they want more manufacturing to be brought back to the United States. But that's not also, it's not an easy process, because once a manufacturer leaves, the skills leave as well. And you have to set up a facility, you have to train people, you have to find people that are willing to be trained, and it's not a it's not a short-term process. So when you have tariffs being imposed in March, suggested in March and imposed in July, there's no way to set up a manufacturing facility in the U.S. In that time span.
Well, hopefully in my lifetime that'll get resolved. Another thing that's going on is immigration, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But I'm gonna try something, okay? This is for you, and we have this really interesting show every Monday morning called 15 with the Author, that Terry Knight does an interview with them, and this is going to be a real interesting show today. And let's pretend that you are a broadcaster, and somebody came in and said, "Here, give this commercial, will you please, or promotional announcement." 1, 2, 3, go.
The title pretty much says it all. Just when you're comfortable in your own skin, it starts to sag. Rewriting the Rules of Midlife. On today's 15 with the Author, Terry Knight talks with Amy Noble, pronounced Noble, half of the best-selling duo with Tricia Ashworth. They take women through the new and sometimes challenging midlife phase in this clever, witty guide. Amy talks about letting go of who we thought we were supposed to be and the redefining of beauty as we age. She talks about how social media affects moods. The book is filled with humor, quizzes, and inspiring quotes for women who've been there. That's at 11 o'clock this morning on KYMN Radio.
Way to go, Boris. All right, you're hired. We'll be back right after this important timeout on Kim. We are a friend you can count on, you know.
Do you have an old junker car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
Number one, the number one song in the top 100 Billboard songs in 1988. And Boris, you were a senior in high school when this was popular.
Life is too much.
Yes, Roll With It is the name of the tune. Steve is the guy that sang it.
Stevie Wonder.
No.
No.
No. No.
Steve. No, that's not Stevie.
No. No.
That doesn't quite sound like Stevie Wonder, does it?
And it's not Steve Miller either.
It's not Steve Miller.
Steve Winwood.
Yes, Steve Winwood.
You remember it?
I remember the song, and I saw the cover, and I saw Steve W. For that triggered Stevie Wonder in my mind, but I know that's not Stevie Wonder. So.
Okay, I'll put it over here. Well, here we are at 19 minutes after 10 o'clock on this beautiful Monday morning, and it is June 25th, 2018, and I want to say hi to Boris Parker's children, and that would be Anastasia and Elizabeth. And
Dasha.
Dasha, okay. And
but Elizabeth, you can say hi to Elizabeth, too.
Yeah, that's your wife. But, you know, maybe 10 years from now, they'll be listening to this particular piece of information. And that's why I'm saying it's a beautiful day and all of that there. Okay. Now, Dasha and Anastasia, listen to what your dad has to say about immigration, because your mother and your father are immigrants. And now we'll talk to my audience and say, well, there are a lot of people in this town that have an opinion about immigration one way or the other. And you, being an immigrant, but a very young boy at 9 years old when your father came, have you worked with any attorneys that are immigration specialists in the community?
Sure, sure. I used to, you know, even in college, I worked with the Minnesota Advocates for Human Rights, and we helped immigrants with asylum claims. Our office handled immigration clients. It's Litterman and Sieferman, which was the firm that represented KYMN Radio. And our firm now does some immigration work. It's more business related, but we do help individuals from time to time. I'm not an immigration specialist, but I serve on the board of the International Business Law Association for our Minnesota Bar, and we have a number of immigration attorneys that are very good. And we have clients, you know, business clients that deal with H-1B visas or other professional type of visas that we consult on. So the issue here, why do we have people crossing the border, Wayne?
Oh, well, they believe that they're going to have a better life, or because they were probably able to get a minimum paying job, that they could send most of it back to their country so that their homeland families would have a better life.
Right. So they're looking for a better life. Okay? We have a better life here than they do in El Salvador, at least these folks believe, right, that are crossing the border. And I'm just using that country, or Nicaragua, whatever, wherever they're coming from, or Mexico. So the question is, why are they crossing the border? Why aren't they applying through the normal channels?
Because they can.
No, that's not quite right. They because there's quotas on the amount of immigrants from each country. So we have quotas from countries in Africa, from countries like Russia, from Japan, from France. You know, we do have immigrants from France, for instance, here. There's a French chamber, French community. I have a number of friends that immigrated from France that prefer the United States. So we have quotas or limits on each country. And the problem is there's more people from Mexico that want to come into the United States.
Because it's easier.
Well, because it's a better life here. You've been to Mexico, right? I've been to Mexico.
Yes.
It's a nice vacation, but I personally would prefer living here than in Mexico. I think the opportunities are better here, the education system, the health system, the just from a safety standpoint, I think you're better off here. So these people are, you know, looking for the same type of opportunities. And when the quotas, you know, they're, even if they apply right now, the wait, for instance, for family reunification out of Mexico is maybe 10 years, and I don't have the latest numbers, but it's many years that you're waiting for your brother or your sister, you know, even though you've got legal status, you're a U.S. citizen, you came from Mexico legally, you stayed, you have status, you know. So that's the problem, is there's more people that want to be here than we're allowing to come in from certain countries. And that's why they're taking illegal measures to get here, because for them, it's worth the risk. For the children, it's worth the risk, because they figure any way that they can get a foothold here is better than what they have back home. So how we deal with that problem is the million-dollar question. You know, there are no easy answers. You know, do you try to stop them have a strict policy at the border that we catch you, you're prosecuted, you go back? You know, do we vet them out, that there are legitimate stories there that, you know, that deserve, for instance, an asylum, but somebody being persecuted? You know, are there women that are, you know, that are in need of protection, or children? You know, so we have to, I think, you know, have some kind of balance in place. But it's not an easy question. And you have, you know, Europe was battling with similar type of issues. We had the migrants from Syria that are being displaced by war. What do you do with people that are being displaced by war? You know, at one time America was taking people in from Europe when there was a war. We were taking people from Russia when during the Cold War. It was an open door policy, basically. Anybody who wanted to come could come, but those were limited numbers. So right now we're dealing with numbers that are higher than what the government believes our system or our country can absorb, and that's what we're dealing with. We also have limited resources on the immigration judicial side, where it's USCIS or the immigration courts are very limited in resources. You know, we've got, for instance, three judges that handle cases from Minnesota, the Dakotas, Iowa. You know, we've got 60 judges sitting in Hennepin County. So you can imagine the type of backlog that's involved. And so that's why you're having now the Mr. Trump either tweeting, or I don't know where the comments are coming from regarding, you know, let's forgo due process, right? Let's just send people back. So if we start foregoing due process, are we violating our own constitution? You know, where do we draw the line? There's some, you know, fine ethical questions with respect to who we are and how we want this country to move forward. And I think the main thing is not forgetting our values and how we all got here and how we built this country, and making sure that we maintain those, you know. And you have to adjust and be flexible as you go along, because things change, you know. The internet changed a lot of things.
Well, it's a political football. That's the sad part of it. I mean, it's all about policy and mine's better than yours, na 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 na. And, you know, if everybody, and this is a wish that will never come true, but if you could get all of the administrations, Congress and Senate, and et cetera, together on one page and look on how do we resolve this. I mean, there are people that say anybody and everybody, any way they can come to America. And there are those that say, yeah, but we don't have open-door policy anymore. You have to be able to gain your way into America. And looking for the brightest and best people from Russia, etc. And then, so how do you meet in the middle on something like that? You know, show a high school diploma when you cross the border illegally? And people are so passionate about it, you know, and you anger people if you say one thing, and you anger the other side if you say another thing.
Well, it's hard to win, but the anger comes from misinformation. So the number one issue, why I went to law in the first place, was to understand what the heck is going on. Because in America, you have to understand the laws and because the actions of the government, of business community, they're based on the laws, and the laws are followed in this country. We don't have the level of corruption that we have in Russia, for instance, or even in Italy, you know, for another example. So, at least I believe so. And that's why, you know, if you have accurate information as to what's going on, people can make better decisions, and it becomes less passionate. It's based on actual facts. And that's the best thing that our government could do, our news services could do, is relay accurate information. So when you're talking about qualified individuals, there are a number of visa categories which are full every year, pursuant to which very qualified individuals come here to work, from which you can then gain a green card over after 6 or 7 years, and after that you can gain citizenship. So we bring in, 60 to 100,000 of highly qualified skilled workers a year into this country to meet those mathematical positions, you know, the technical positions that you and I were discussing at the beginning that our, you know, education system is not picking up. So we do have those individuals, and we do have quotas on those visas, and we have quotas on family type visas and on guest visas. the issue is, more people want to come here than what the government allows, and then you have violations.
And then, of course, the question is, what do you do with those individuals that are jumping the gun, as they say, and trying to get into the country, hide, and not go through the process of becoming a citizen, but living
you have
here
to enforce the law.
Life. Yeah,
you have no choice, right? We have a system that has to be enforced. And if there's, you can make exclusions if there's, you know, rare circumstances, but you have to enforce the system. And the other aspect of, you know, the people that are here, that have been here for 20 years, that didn't come here as documented. So basically what happens if you enter the country and you're not stamped at the border, for purposes of our government and our system, you're not here. So, and there's nothing an attorney can do with that individual, even if they're, you know, if somebody came to us and said, you know, we came here in 1999, crossed the border, we've been working here, you know, we've got kids here, that individual is not what we call adjustable, per se, meaning you can't change their status without them leaving the country because our government doesn't show them as here. And literally, you know, and this goes back to the Bush administration, you know, you could change one or two words in the Immigration Act that would allow those types of people that are here, that have houses, that have been working, you know, that are productive members of the community, to adjust their status, pay a fine. You know,
some of those are dreamers.
Some of those are that dreamer type of category.
Yeah.
You know, where you could do something. In other words, there's ways to make simple changes if we could just reach some kind of agreement. Or consensus that could eliminate, you know, 50% of the problem, and then we can start working on the other 50%. You know, so I think we just need to look at it more productively, look at solutions, and we as a public have to ask and demand, I think, accurate information from our politicians, from the news media. We need to know what's actually going on. And then we can help make the right decisions. Then we can push our elected officials in the direction that is going to be in the best interest of everyone involved. And that's ultimately the solution we're trying to, or ultimately the goal. We're trying to find a solution that works best given the circumstances that we're dealing with.
And with the midterms coming up in November, it is, like I said earlier, a political football. And it's not fun because you're talking about math people, and you enjoyed arithmetic, and then
got out of it and went into law.
Yeah.
Once I hit calculus, that was it.
But it's logic. That's what I like about law,
right.
Is that it can be associated.
Logical reasoning,
yeah.
Correct.
So, you know, there's such inflammatory statements being made by people, politicians, against one another, and it's creating havoc, in my opinion, when somebody disses one party and then they shoot back, and it, you know, what about just good old America and let's run smooth like a machine and all that stuff and let's obey the laws and
let's figure things out.
You know, so you know, let's get you know, have you ever been to Detroit or Akron or any of the Rust Belt and seen it firsthand?
Sure.
I mean, that is so sad why and how that happened. Now, it probably goes back further than when you were legally able to vote. When did you get to vote, by the way, as a 9-year-old?
88.
Okay. And you were born in?
It's 1970.
Okay, so at 18.
Correct. That's here. Are you talking about Russia and voting?
No, I'm talking about you being a 9-year-old.
Yeah.
And
the United States, it's 18, you're able to vote.
Yeah, but what about your parents?
You're able to die for your country, but you can't drink alcohol.
Yeah, I know that argument. But what about your mom and dad? I mean, did they have to wait 6 years to get a green card? Or what?
Well, no, we came here, so we applied for legal permanent residence.
Okay.
And we were accepted as we came here as refugees.
And you
from
were sponsored.
Russia. We were sponsored by an association here, and then we paid back the association. For instance, they set up, gave us some mattresses and some initial furniture, you know, and helped find an apartment. And, you know, Dad went to work right away, Mom went to school, and the rest is history. And I went to school, Aquila Middle School, and started working with an ESL teacher, you know, to learn English.
English as a second language.
English as a second language, which is what Elizabeth teaches in Edina. So,
are there a lot of foreign students in the Edina school system?
There are, sure, that come many in foreign meaning from, you know, from Sweden, from France, from Somalia, you name it. They come here to work or to live, from India, you know, and then they settle in a school district that has very good ratings, and the kids need to learn English.
Do you have a lot of things printed up in foreign languages for the children that are here waiting to become U.S. citizens? For example, like out in California, I think they have 140 different languages that are spoken, you know.
Yeah, I know
and
the courts
so the rules
here
that come out, you know, now... you know, you make a phone call, and if it's recorded, it's right. English and Spanish, and then things are print. I saw something in South St. Paul, I think it was, when we were there Friday, that had, it looked to me like it was like Hmong on a bus sign.
Yeah, they, you know, if you go into the courthouse, then you'll see there'll probably 6-7 different languages that are printed on the various public information. That's available. So, but to go back to your question, so when we came here, we applied for legal permanent status. So when we got here, we got a green card. And then within 5 years, you can apply, or after 5 years, you can apply for citizenship, which is what we did. And then you passed the exams for language and history and the Constitution. And
And
you get a naturalized certificate. Which
and
I have.
And your folks did that.
My folks did that.
You didn't have to do it because you were in school and learned it?
Yeah, I think I was 13 when I got... Yeah, the kids, listen, kids that come here at a young age learn English pretty quick. Yeah. And you stop speaking your native language, and that's why you were asking me about my kids. You know, they kind of stop speaking their language, and that's what, you know, it's particular. So even though we tried to teach them when they're, you know, babies to preschool, once they go to school, it's, you know, they need to focus on English and maximizing that. But now and they can always take it in college as a second language, which is typically a requirement anyways.
Now, you just said the magic words, and we'll talk about those magic words right after these magic words from one of our sponsors on your radio station.
Have you ever felt like your business has been tripped up by your bank? Franz and Bank and Trust understands how to be a financial resource for all types of small and large businesses and how to finance them. You might say that we are the best kept secret in business banking. Franzen Bank and Trust, the bank that comes to play.
Contact your local Franzen Bank and Trust office at franzenbank.com. That's FRANZEN Bank.com.
Member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Alyssa, director at the Vital Link Adult Day Center on the Three Links campus. Our program is for adults requiring care during the day and includes nutritious home-cooked meals, stimulating group activities, as well as outings to local attractions. VitalLink provides support to caregivers during the day. Transportation is available. Please call me at 664-8865 to schedule a tour or find out more at 3links.org.
Boris, put on your earphones, will you, please? I have to start this over because you weren't listening, so here we go. Number 8, 1988. Name this tune into the microphone there.
Hey, hey, you.
Step into my car.
Yes, you. Get into my car.
Get into my car?
No, it's called.
I can't remember.
Yes. It's called Get Out of My Dreams.
Get Into My Car.
Yeah. And Billy.
Billy Ocean or something?
Yeah.
I got one right.
21 minutes before, it's 11 o'clock on this Monday morning, June 25th, 2018. Boris Parker, my guest. And Boris, I had a question in regards to your telling us, and I want you to repeat it, what your parents had to do to gain American citizenship.
Well, you basically, once you're here 5 years under a green card or a lawful permanent residence, you can apply for citizenship, and then you're required to, you know, complete an application, pass a background check, and then you take an English and a civics exam, which you have to pass in order to gain citizenship. And then that's what they did, and then you're naturalized. And we were naturalized, I think it was Mayor Coleman. No, it can't be Mayor Coleman back in the...
In St. Paul?
Yeah. Back in the 80s was America. I'm trying to remember who we were at a naturalization.
George Latimer?
I can't remember. We were No, it would have been...
Nick?
Yeah, it would have been late or mid-80s about when this took place. So I remember being at the naturalization ceremony at the St. Paul, I think it was at the Civic Center or the Convention Center there, and they had the Festival of Nations going on at the same time. So we were naturalized in St. Paul.
But you had to meet all these requirements.
Well, the requirements are you have to pass the basically English and civics exam.
So. Yeah, civic, and know the Constitution.
Correct, and history and so forth.
Yeah, and a lot of people aren't doing that.
Well, anybody who wants to be a citizen is doing that, and they prepare and then they pass. So,
I think one of the finest thing to attend is to be at an event that puts people in the position of becoming officially an American, and you kind of think to yourself, you know, they want to be American. I was born American. I'm lucky.
Right.
And so, anyhow.
Well, and we live in, you know, and we live in a good time. We are, our kids, you know, don't know. I mean, we've been at war for a number of
17
years.
I think it is now.
Right, but our kids really don't, you know, it hasn't hit, you know, obviously there's some families that have been very affected, and our heart goes out to them. But on the whole, we've kind of isolated and removed from everything. You know, if you think about my parents, for instance, had to go through in World War II, and then, you know, evacuations and whole cities being, you know, burnt. And so we've been...
Oh, yeah, I see those...
We've been, in, you know, in a good time for, you know, for many years. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, the most important thing at the end of the day is the economy. It's the ability for every family to have a roof and a car and put, you know... bread on the table, and they, you know, feel like they can take care of
wasn't
themselves.
There a cry back in the 90s, it's the economy, stupid.
Right.
Yeah. One of the things that you're doing right now, and is a pet peeve of mine, and that is you are not looking me in the eye, you're looking at your cell phone. And I don't know why.
My mom is texting me.
Oh. Anyhow, did you want to talk to her? Give her a call. We'll put you on the... I think cell phones have been injurious to youth today. I really do. I mean...
Not only youth.
Adults. And I saw a montage of pictures. I think it was in either a magazine or a newspaper where it showed people dining.
Right.
And all of them
on their phone.
Yeah. They were sitting out by the park. And
right.
They're all on the phone.
And they're not enjoying the views and... I hear you.
And it just is all encompassing for, and I mean, fortunately your kids weren't around for this type of...
Well, the youngest one was, or is.
Okay,
well, but I think it depends on not all the kids are that way. You know, some are on social media and are on the phones more than others. And, we try to get ours into a variety of activities. So our kids enjoy other things. I enjoy other things. You know, I like being outside. I like sports. You know, I still play hockey, soccer, you know, golf.
You still play hockey?
You
still play golf?
I'm missing some teeth, but I still play hockey.
Okay. I was noticing your biceps. Are you working out?
Not as much as I need to. So it's a lot of beer, you know. So.
You know, if somebody just tuned in, they say, "Did that guy just say I noticed your bicep?" So how's your golf game? Your daughter's doing real well.
She's doing better than I am, right?
Okay.
But I'm blessed. I'm blessed, of course.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I gotta keep up, you know, with the family here, so. Can't completely embarrass myself,
yeah.
But I haven't had a chance to play as much as I like. But on the other hand, you know, we got to play with her, so it's a blessing. And
yeah.
Every time I come out, you know, at a golf beautiful golf course, you know, you just think of how lucky we are. And there's no place like that in the world where you have to. It's usually, you know, golf courses. I've been to China, to Russia, you know, even Europe. It's more for the elite here. You know, anybody. And the average Joe can come out and play just a gorgeous, you know, we were at Rush Creek on Saturday, you know, having dinner on the patio. It's just phenomenal views.
I usually golf in the upper set. Well, now it's more like the lower 80s. You know, it gets any cooler than that, I don't want to be out there.
Yeah. That's a problem in Minnesota, you know.
Yeah.
You don't have many of those days, Wayne.
I did. I was on a team for Laura Baker. For their big big deal, and there were four of us on the team, three men and one woman,
yeah.
And we got a double eagle on a five.
That's awesome.
And we won the whatever that's called, the money
the
that
tournament.
You throw in at the big
the well, raffle
no
scramble maybe
it would. It's a scramble. They have raffle, but they also have money that you throw in the pot.
Okay.
And then whatever, anyhow, it's $800. Pretty
not
nice.
Not bad.
I liked
not
it.
Bad.
So have you done any international business where you fly to China and stay there?
I fly to China a couple times a year.
That's got to be a long flight.
It is. It's either lots of movies or lots of sleep. So whichever one you can...
Do you fly first class?
Very rarely. So
okay.
Very rarely. It's usually the comfort seat, so...
Now,
first class over there isn't very cheap. So
okay. So what about? Did you say that? Where do you go in China? Where do you fly into?
I fly into Shanghai.
Which is a
really beautiful and modern city, and it's amazing to see how much it has changed. Basically, you've got the west side, and I may be getting the east and the west mixed up, but the west side, which is the older side, which was built by the British and the Japanese, and you have the Bund, which is the river that runs through the city, and then you have the east side, which is this modern metropolis that looks like New York that was built in the last 20 years with beautiful skyscrapers, and it's a really international, interesting place.
Is that representing that Moto company? Or
CF Moto, correct.
CF Moto. I have never heard of them. I'm sorry, but I have never heard of them.
You have now.
Yeah, well,
Leo South, who was doing a commercial here, or advertising on your station, they're one of our original dealers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So are you, like, competing against Polaris?
Correct.
Okay, well, that's pretty...
And Arctic Cat and then BRP and those types of companies, so...
So when you go over there, do you ever bring family with you?
Sure. And we played some golf over there, too. So I brought Dasha before, and we've played there. It's beautiful, but it's very private, and very few people play it. That's why I'm saying the accessibility level, you know, is not nearly what it is here. And I was bragging to you when I came in that my daughter, she goes to school in Edina, and the girls' team has won 4 state championships in a row, and she's been lucky. She's going to be senior next year and a captain, and so she's been on the team since her freshman year, so she's gotten to compete, and it just what a blessing it is. They get to play at beautiful courses and in the Classic Lake Conference, which includes Dinah Country Club and Interlochen and Wayzata and Minnetonka clubs. So it's just, you couldn't ask for anything more, and keeps her away from the phone and keeps her out of trouble.
I was reading in the Minneapolis Tribune that there are seventh graders that are winning golf tournaments.
Right, there was the top golfer, the girl that won state this year, is a seventh grader. So
isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Are you serious when you say you're a good golfer?
I'm an average golfer, I suppose.
Well, what's your handicap?
Like a 9 or an 8.
So. Oh, okay. All right. That's pretty reasonable.
So I can get into the single digits. Low 80s.
Yeah. Well, here in Northfield, they're going to have a referendum, I believe, that's going to put a half a cent tax on sales. And you ever get into any that?
Sure. I deal with the Minnesota Department of Revenue quite a bit on behalf of businesses that like to come in. And then, Hennepin County, the tax on liquor and entertainment for a restaurant or a nightclub establishment is 10%. And that's, there's use tax and entertainment tax and tax on top of tax. So, it's quite expensive to do business, so you'd be surprised.
Now, I understand that lawyers study the Constitution.
That's one of our core classes in law school in first year.
Okay. Now, I thought somewhere there was a rule of some sort that says you cannot tax taxes.
Well, there's limitations on taxation pursuant to the Constitution, but that's been, interpreted by the legislature, which enacts tax-related legislation. It's then vetted by the judiciary, which says it's constitutional or not constitutional, and then it's executed by the executive branch or, the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service.
So a guy walks into a liquor store, and he buys a bottle of anything, okay? And let's say it's $20. Now, half of that, or maybe a little less than half, is taxes. Federal tax? State tax?
More. More
okay.
than half. I'll give you a story. So,
okay.
Johnson Brothers.
Yes.
Is here in St. Paul. It's a distributor.
Over
so
on
they were looking. We had a client... looking to import vodka from Russia into the United States. I remember meeting with some representatives of Johnson Brothers. So the tax, you're looking at, they're trying to bring in the vodka in bulk under $2 a liter, basically. And I don't know if I'm giving away trade secrets, but that's what, basically what distributors or importers would be paying here for a average brand vodka that you would sell at a liter for $20. It's the amount of tax and the import duties and everything else from the state to the feds is 80%.
Okay. So you helped me make my point.
Your point is well made.
So you go in, you buy that $20 bottle of vodka, 80% of it is taxes, and now you're going to pay a sales tax on the $20,
right.
Which is, $1.40.
Right.
I mean,
tax on tax.
Yeah, right. and I just think that isn't right.
Right. Well, cigarettes aren't cheap these days either.
Well, they're called sin tax.
Right.
Yeah, and some places, I'll tell you, if you know somebody in North Carolina or Missouri or something like that, they're half price down there. That's if you smoke, which is stupid. You shouldn't do it.
Correct.
And
don't smoke.
Don't ever start. Sometimes it's hard to quit.
Are you looking for spacious senior living in Northfield? Feel at home at Northfield Retirement Communities, Northwood Pines. Available for individuals and couples, this assisted living combines the privacy of one-bedroom plus den apartments with family-style meals and care available around the clock. Visit us online at northfieldretirement.org or call us today at 664-3466. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
If you need to send a box far away or something overnight, want a cool sign for your business or a banner for your birthday, and you don't know how to do it, we'll help you through it at the Graphic Mailbox. You can make copies, get supplies, find a box, ship a box, buy stamps, fax a letter, get your mail, send your mail, make a sign, design a sign, fix a sticker, print a poster, FedEx, DHL, UPS, Speedy, or even through the U.S. mail. If you don't know how to do it, we'll help you through it at the Graphic Mailbox.
Okay, it's 5 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Here's a number 5 song in all of 1988. Number 5.
We're no strangers to love.
Can you guess that name of the song?
I can by looking at it now, but
okay.
Never gonna give up.
Never gonna give you up.
Never gonna give you up. See, I read the promo better.
Yeah.
Rick Astley. I couldn't remember it, if you asked me.
Okay, how about this one? Do you know this one?
Sure. Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
Sweet Child of Mine.
Yeah. Don't forget, 15 with the author coming up at 11 o'clock here on the Wayne Eddy Affair. No, not on my show. It's her show. Well, let's wrap this thing up here. What would you like to talk about? Did you... enjoy your visit to Northfield during Defeated Jesse James days. I can't recall how long ago it was.
Yeah,
but
I haven't been down here for a number of years, so yeah. I'll have to revisit and then bring my girls.
Do you remember being down for that?
I have, yes.
Okay. I was just wondering if I helped you get a good seat for the raid reenactment.
I remember you used to ride around on a horse. So.
Oh, it's been that long?
Yeah.
Holy cow. Yeah, that's been a while. I haven't done that for a while. So have you fulfilled your dream in regards to your success? When I met you, you were working for another law firm. And what is a pecking order in a law firm? First, you get a job.
Yeah. Somebody hires you, and then you work your way up the ladder, just like you do in any other business. So,
well, I mean, is the end result being a partner?
Well, a partner or a shareholder, you know. So, Nick Winter is my partner, or shareholder in Parker and Winter, and we started. You know, I started in 1998 with Sliderman and Sieferman, and Nick became a partner about that time in that firm. And then,
oh, were you a partner there?
I was a partner subsequently.
Don't you get your name on the door?
Yes and no. It depends on, you know, there's lots of larger firms here in town, you know, say, you know, Dorsey and Whitney, that has multiple partners or shareholders that yeah. are not on the door because they've, you know, the name is synonymous for marketing. And so that doesn't necessarily indicate your status within the firm. So it's who you, you know, who you work with, who you represent, what kind of, you know, what kind of job you do. And in terms of your questions on have I achieved the dreams, and you know, if I look back at the 15-year-old kid who was sitting around and wanting a, you know, a family and a house and a good job and everything that, you know, you dream about at that age, and a fun car and stuff, the answer is yes. And you know, it's what I tell my kids as well, you know, is that, listen, you've done everything that we've wanted you to do or become. Now it's, you know, once they turn 16, 17, you're doing it for yourself. We're proud of you. You're a good person. You do well in school. You're a member, you know, of the community. You support the community. You're in sports. That's all we can ask for. The rest, it's your life. It's up to you to make it even better. You know, our job as parents is to input as much as we can from a knowledge standpoint and love and caring, right, and values. It's all about the right values. You know, good values bring good people.
Well, that was
Or make good people.
Yeah, that was well said. I appreciate that. Well, we're going to take I'm going to bid you a farewell. I like the word bad.
Thank you, Wayne. I appreciate being here and seeing you, and we're going to do it more often.
Well, yeah, and bring Dad down.
I will.
And
I will
get the story. See, when I have people that age category that observed the Second World War or were in it, I like to talk about what kind of a house did you live in? What kind of a farm was it? How did you heat your home? How did you cook? How did you iron? How did you wash your clothes?
He'll give you some stories. Yeah. He'll give you some stories.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Wayne.
Boris Parker, Esquire, attorney at law. Boris and Winter is the name of the firm.
Parker and Winter.
Oh. Yeah. Boris and Winter. All right. This is your radio station. We are KYMN 1080 AM and now 95.1 FM from Northfield, Minnesota.
It's time for 15 with the Author, hosted by Terry Knight. Join Terry as she opens the cover on a different book each week and talks with the author about their book, their life, and their message. Take a deeper look under the cover with Terry.
The title pretty much says it all. Just when you're comfortable in your own skin, it starts to sag. Rewriting the Rules of Midlife. On today's 15 with the Author, I talk with Amy Nobley, half of the best-selling duo with Tricia Ashworth. They take women through the new and sometimes challenging midlife phase in this clever, witty guide. Whether married, single, widowed, divorced, with children, or without, at some point women inevitably ask the question, what's next for me? Welcome to the show, Amy.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Great to be here.
You and Tricia both have, like, super fulfilled lives, according to your resumes. You've got careers, marriage, kids, best-selling authors. I mean, come on. How did you two come to this question of midlife?
It is a great question. And, you know, our books kind of find us. We don't find them. We interview hundreds of women for each of our books. And, for instance, when we were in motherhood, early motherhood, we were feeling really overwhelmed, and we felt like no one was really telling the truth. And so we kind of went on a mission to find out what was going on. With this book, you know, we're running our business Ash and Ames, which is a jewelry company run by female artisans around the world, and we were interviewing women to become ambassadors for Ash and Ames to sell the jewelry, and we started hearing kind of the same theme. And these were women around 40s, 50s, and beyond, and they would say kind of, I just feel stuck. I feel like, you know, I used to be a lawyer, or I'm a teacher, or you know, there's a nagging feeling. It's not even about my career. I just feel like I don't know where to go from here. And our moms really never gave us a roadmap. You know, they kind of checked the boxes. And So we're a very different generation of women, and the more Trish and I talked about it, we thought, okay, this is a book. It found us. And sure enough, we talked to hundreds of women for this book, and that theme is really prevalent of, you know, we have the most amazing, smartest, most dynamic, passionate women in this generation turning 40s, 50s, beyond, yet many of us don't even know if we have permission to reinvent ourselves at this phase. And we absolutely do, and we must, because these women are amazing.
And where did you find these women? How did you reach out?
Yeah, so we have we always use sort of like the phone tree kind of method where, you know, we would talk to women. We tried talking to women in person. We tried doing focus groups, and really didn't work. I mean, we did not get the truth. It was only until we got women anonymously on the phone, kind of in a dark closet, kind of confessing their dirty little secrets, and they knew we were going to change their name. So we, for this book, we talked to a